Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had the taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Co-host Epiziana is off this week. She's hopefully unwinding and relaxing on a trip. So I hope she's having a good time. Tonight we have the theme love and hate, which was pulled from a quote I always believed there's a fine line between love and hate by Susan Blommer. So we were given the opportunity to write on whatever direction that took you. No wrong answers. And I believe, Pam, you're here with me. Is that correct?
I am correct. Hello, how's it going?
It's a going.
I'm envious of Epiziana getting to have a little vacation. Very nice for her.
Yeah, no, That sounds great.
It does, doesn't it?
I'm so glad I got here on time. I just had like the worst restaurant experience ever, and it took them, I'm not kidding, 45 minutes to get me my check, and I was starting to get really antsy that I was
going to be late. Oh, my goodness.
So.
Yeah, and that's enough to stretch a person out. I'm guessing you will not be recommending them on Reddit reviews or anything like that.
No, I just want to leave. let me leave. I mean, it was a 6 o'clock dinner reservation. So, yeah, the wait times on everything were insane. And then just the last part was especially ridiculous.
Oh,
anyway.
Wow.
So, do we have anyone on with us, Pam, or is it you and me to start?
To start out with, it's just us two turkeys.
Yes, then I'll go ahead and drop a piece on the board to start with. Give me 2 seconds. Okay. We'll start off with a piece called Teehee by Casey Day. I'll go ahead and give this one a read. Love is like gasoline, and hate is like a flame. When one consumes the other, it won't go back the same. So stop trying, Karen. End poem. So, I mean, this is a brevity, but I enjoy the very sardonic, sarcastic humor, you know, with the end. So stop trying, Karen. I feel like it's, you know, even the title is Teehee is like, you know, I know I'm being kind of rude and cheeky, but I'm going to do it anyway kind of a deal. And then obviously the main body of this piece is the more serious part, you know, where love is a fuel. And if you ignite it, if you burn it up, then, you know, it's consumed and it's not ever going to be there again. So you can't rekindle something that's already burnt. You know, ash doesn't make a good fire. So there's some serious undertones to it and a real message to it, but I like that it's put in a kind of dark humor kind of way. It's a very enjoyable brevity. I thought it was very clever. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, it is a clever brevity. Even the title, it like has a kind of sense of setting you up for mischievousness. I kind of feel bad for anybody who genuinely named their daughters Karen, like back in the 70s or 80s or whenever it was a popular name. And but then
yeah.
There's great humor at the end. And it does, like you said, it's got that serious message because of the whole idea of that the two really, they can't coexist. You know, you can't love and hate at the same time. Romance novels like to convince you can, but in reality, it just doesn't work that way. And so excellent brevity and very well done.
Yeah, on that note of, you know, the romance novels, sometimes in romance stories, when the guy is written to be like a straight-up a-hole or vice versa, no, that's not love. like there are like zero times in a healthy relationship where your partner should make you feel like that or treat you that way. So I'm always like, I don't know what this archetype, not a good archetype.
I know. I mean, you know, the occasional, you know, getting the makeup sex, the angry sex, you know, maybe occasionally as a treat, but as a general rule, you know, not going to hold water.
Yeah, that's not going to sustain a relationship at all.
Exactly.
So,
and before we go on, I'm going to go ahead and bring Jeremy on. And so, welcome, Jeremy. Glad you could join us.
Hey, guys. Sorry I'm late. I was working at the restaurant. I kept trying to give this couple their check, and they just wouldn't take it. I mean, I think they were just going to sit at the table all night long.
Well, I was there with my mother.
Coincidence, huh?
Well,
that was
welcome.
Just like you.
Thanks
dressing up
me.
As a woman.
Happy
today. You're just all over the place, aren't you, Jeremy?
Absolutely.
Welcome. Glad to have you.
Yeah, good to be with you guys. Let's get into some poetry. What do you say?
Yeah. So, Pam, I have dropped the next one on the board. It's called The Catfish by E.F. Rose. Do you mind giving that one a read?
I'll be happy to. The Catfish by E.F. Rose, and it goes like this. Petulant man-child, why did you marry? You had a mother, so you did not need a wife. A 30-year-old infant is not a catch, and I have fried bigger fish both before and after you. Did I see something nourishing in your sallow minnow face that made me hunger for such a miniature bite? Likely you were a common catfish looking to spawn, hiding in minnow's delicate yellow skin, and I fell for the slippery bait. Does Mommy remember when you dragged home your prize, the pride, the relief that you were a man? But there is only animus there, now that I have released you back to the brackish waters of your hatchery. She rails against the fisher for tossing away her favorite specimen, though you are an embryo still. Bronze hooked hands raise your puckered fish mouth and stinging whiskers to her sea-weathered cheek, and I turn my choking sun-speckled face away from your saline air towards succulent green atmosphere to clear my lungs of you. One breath, maybe two. The salt drops and piles at my feet, and I kick it back into the tide from which you came. End poem.
Excellent read, Pam. You know, I really liked this one, just the, you know, the extended metaphor of, you know, a fish. And there's so many fish metaphors in this that, you know, are about relationships. You know, even a catfish where it's like you pretend to be something that you're not to attract somebody, or the idea that there's more fish in the sea, or, you know, just the idea of a catch in general, I thought was really clever and very well executed throughout here. And just the idea that, you know, this man-child, you know, goes straight from mommy to wife and never growing up, you know, and somehow, you know, hoodwinking this woman, for at least for a brief time, into being in a relationship when they're just, you know, you can feel the disdain for this man. Like, just how they're almost kind of grossed out, I get the impression, by themselves that they fell for this at all. You know, slightly less than they are that they dislike the person, but there's still a little bit of, like, why did I fall for the slippery bait, you know? And just the lack of respect for anything that this guy had to offer. So I really enjoyed it. You know, the walking through of a relationship that soured to the point where this other person is just now referred to as a catfish and a petulant man child who, you know, is worth basically nothing. It's no catch at all. It's a very subtle way to be like, not that subtle, but more polite way to say that, you know, you're a big old piece of crap. I really liked it. I thought it was really well done. I could feel the emotion on it, you know, just the dripping disdain and almost disgust. So I thought this was a fantastic piece of writing. What did you think, Jeremy?
Yeah, great comments, Babbler. I you hit a lot of my hot points on what you said. I agree with the metaphor. I was looking for that our initial definition of catfish in which you mentioned, in which someone pretends to be someone that they're not. And I read this more with an air of disdain and anger towards the subject, and a catfish being more of a bottom feeder is how I interpreted the metaphor of it all. The read, Pam, you nailed a couple parts of this that really took that anger to another level. When you read that line in the 1, 2, 3, 4, in the fifth, when you said, does mommy remember? I mean, you really said it in a mocking tone that I think really captured the spirit of the poem and added a lot to the whole experience for me. And in terms of the wordy in all of us, I really like the animus, how the word animus in the sixth was placed there. I think that was a beautiful word. But, yeah, like I said, Babbler, I think you captured a lot of the same feelings that I had with this. I really enjoyed the write. I always can appreciate an extended metaphor, especially when someone can carry it across with themes that aren't laden with too much repetition. Capture the whole feel, and they go with that whole – they take you to that place They take you to all the tools they need to get exactly where they want you to be with that metaphor, which really helps you understand and get into the feel of what they're trying to convey. Great poem. Enjoyed every part of it.
Yeah, great point. I like what you pointed out about the catfish. I think you're right. It's not so much about, like, the person pretending to be beautiful as much as it is the bottom feeder, you know, the sucker fish. So excellent point. And what do you think, Sam?
Yeah, I really like the attitude that she put in this and how, you know, like you said, she doesn't go straight to, like, just swearing and cussing in a vulgar way, but she definitely dishes out the insult. And I also, I do like how this is about somebody who pretended to be a better person than they actually were, who, and yet at the same time, it's kind of, although not obviously mentioned, there's this kind of a thought of, you know, being that one who fell for the slippery bait, you know, whether it's because we're getting pressure from family and friends or for whatever the reason, there's sometimes in life where we're at almost like a vulnerable point. And we look past what should be warning signs. And I do appreciate the way she threw out the punches and reminds him that, you know, she is moving on. She is kicking all the salt away. She's like basically wiping away the tears, starting fresh, and he no longer means anything to her. And she basically, her eyes have been opened. Just an absolutely excellent write and very well done.
You know, that's a really interesting point, Pam. I didn't even catch on that. I like what you just said about the lack of profanity in this, because I think a lot of times profanity can be used as a crutch, almost an overspice to a write where it hits someone in the face just for the point of hitting someone in the face. And this one very easily with a sentiment could have thrown a lot of cuss words in there to exacerbate the point. And I didn't even notice. I didn't notice the lack, or I didn't feel a need for inclusion. I think that venom was well conveyed without it, but very well could have snuck it in. But that's, I really like that point that you made there.
Thank you. Are you on mute, Babbler?
I am on
mute. Okay.
what I said is excellent point, Pam. I agree. And then I had thrown up the next piece on the board, and I was wondering if we could get Jeremy to read that for us.
You betcha. Randy G., the poem is titled Limbo. Love is the ultimate emotional roller coaster ride with dips and turns from which you cannot hide. Breathtakingly, it can cause the proud to stumble, or just as easily, it might mortify the very humble. Love is a game that contains ever-changing rules. Those trying to cheat it end up playing the fool because a bold manipulator of great effect and ruthlessly deals from the bottom of the deck. Hate is sometimes caused the result of love's revolution, the byproduct of its turmoil, an uneasy evolution, predictably inevitable, knowing what's on the line, boundaries between joy and pain, poorly defined. Hate is the weed, often growing in love's garden, springing up unexpectedly, rarely offering pardon. Consider carefully when approaching love, gate entrance into a limbo, another world of love and hate and pull.
Thank you for the read, Jeremy. I thought this one was really interesting. You know, just the breakdown of two stanzas, just this format examining, you know, love and hate and the operation of either, you know, and that love itself has ups and downs. And, you know, is usually a really great thing, but of course, part of what makes love, especially young love, so exhilarating is the unknown, you know, which is also kind of frightening. And then, you know, the ever-changing rules and people who try to cheat at it, you know, then you don't get it at all. you know, it is a little more complex and a little more sneaky than you'd think. And then the examination of hate, you know, can be the result, you know, of love gone awry, and it kind of form into, which is nice lead into from the last poem where, you know, that seemed to have been the case, where it turns from love to hate. I really love the line, you know, hate is the weed often growing in love's garden, you know, because a lot of times I think that is the truth of it, is you trust someone and you love someone and you care for someone, and then that betrayal is so much worse. You don't have those kind of expectations of strangers. You have expectations of how you're going to be treated from the people that you care about, which was what makes it such a backhand, that makes it then turn into an equally strong emotion. And then, of course, the end, you know, be careful, you know, make sure you're going through the right door, which, of course, you can't always tell which is which. So I thought this was an interesting poem. I was particularly drawn to the formatting of it, and just the breakdown of the examination was somewhat methodical, which I thought was a nice way to look at something that is, you know, emotional. So I thought this was a really great write. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really like this. It has a nice rhyme and flow to it. I like how he's kind of got, like, different metaphors for love and hate throughout the poem, like that the idea that love is the ultimate emotional roller coaster ride, and that it doesn't always take a straight and steady path, and that oftentimes, there are people who don't play by the rules. They manipulate. You know, and these are the people who really truly don't know what love is. They don't know it's all to them like a means to an end. And I have to agree, the garden metaphor was really lovely. And the idea that here you have something that you're tending, you're cultivating, you're making it something beautiful and healthy, and the weeds just get in there and they, you know, they take it over. And I like the metaphor, the use of the word limbo, and the idea of being stuck in between love and hate and really never feeling like you're getting anywhere. So excellent write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Yeah, just that idea of stuckness, the neither nor. Yeah, great point. Oh, what did you think, Jeremy?
Yeah, I think you guys had great comments and great thoughts about this. Obviously, for the old cliche of the thin line between the love and hate, I think it's very true because they're both very intense emotions, and they both tug at you. And this is going to sound like a weak excuse, but reading these poems cold without being familiar with them can be tough. It can be tough to perform them. And so when I'm going through this for the first time, I'm trying to play by the rules of the punctuation on what they did. And I really noticed the pauses particularly, and the tug of this poem really felt like a struggle. And the fact that the first half and then the second half were supposed to be the yin and yang between love and hate, it really was like a cool, of course it was 100% just in my mind, but it was a cool tug of what was going on and the rip of emotion that one feels when they're dealing with the intensity of both love and or hate. And so that was kind of a personal struggle that I was feeling as I was trying to do this poem justice and reading it. I thought that play on the pausing and the tug really was pronunciated. It was really clear in my self-consciousness of trying to go through it. So less about me, more about the poem. Very much enjoyed it. And I like the fact that it did do the yin and yang and looked at both sides of things when really they're not that different. So I thought it was a very cool dance. Well done.
No, agreed. Yeah, no, that is a really good point about the punctuation. As you were reading it, looking at where the commas lie, you know, and they're in some interesting locations that gives it an almost kind of interrupted cadence sometimes, almost like a intentional emotional stutter. So excellent point. Thanks for pointing that out. I have dropped the next one on the board, which is by Franck, the Poetic Picasso. It is titled A Lover, Not a Hater. And I'll go ahead and give this one a read. I would choose always love over hatred. Enjoy love making than resenting lovers I had. When 'tis better to live life at its fullest than regret one's bitter past. For the world we know is much more simplistic, but we make the world so complex when it is not. Thus, the notion of a lover is more appealing and intriguing compared to the extreme jealousy of a hater who thinks about the glory of power and vengeance, but lacks the one thing reasonable, common sense, which sadly few individuals in this society demonstrate. Oh, I much prefer the passion of a lover than the spite of one. A lover is like a beautiful rose with fresh petals and a sweet scent, to adore and to treat with such fond affection, and give that lover in great measure your heart and dedication. That lover will give you soul and commitment. Anyone can profess to be famous and important, as anyone can proclaim to be endowed with physical beauty. But all that matters to me is the truth, for which I gladly acknowledge as my candor, and the reason to aspire to its realization. 'Tis not about being a man or woman that makes you a good lover, but knowing what your lover feels and needs, and to share in the pain and joy, so intimately and faithfully, for that lover must first know the difference between sexuality and sensuality. Love is exotic. Passion is erotic. A lover is sensual. Lovemaking is intellectual. I am a lover, not a hater. It is what it is. End poem. So this was a really nice piece. I see that it has a SoundCloud at the bottom, but I got it right as the show was starting. But thank you so much for the piece, Franck. I really liked the look at, you know, what really is love and what, you know, what is it to be a lover and not a hater? You know, especially that breakdown at the end, you know, that it's that love is exotic. You know, it's a rare, it's a wild thing. It's always new and unfamiliar when it's just starting. And then, you know, passion is what is erotic. And a lover can be sensual, but love making itself is intellectual. It's in the mind. You know, it's the way that you feel somebody about somebody on a mental level, you know, the different places of your mind that they capture and titillate. It's, you know, it's not just as simple as, you know, getting together beneath the sheets. That's not really what makes a lover. That's, you know, what makes a sexual partner. It's not the same thing. And I really love how this delves into the depths of, like, what that difference is, you know. You know, being a good lover isn't about just sex. It's about so much more than that, and what that means. And I think this does an excellent job of very romantically describing these differences. So I thought it was a beautiful piece. What did you think, Jeremy?
Oh, Franck, you big softy. We knew you were a lover all along. I'm sure he's listening in. This is it was a great piece, and it was very philosophical about the whole argument about, and I think we'll get into it as we read more about more poems on this topic, but the yin and yang between lover and hater, and the fact that he is such an advocate to be a lover. And when you think about it, I mean, there's so many points in this poem that I want to sit down with him and just kind of, it's a very philosophical way of looking at it all, is the only way I can really describe it. I like his attitude, and you can't argue it. I mean, who doesn't want to cheer for the lover and put their thumb down and hold their nose at the hater, because no one loves a hater. So it's a point that you can't argue with. The fact that there's passion in being the lover, the only conversation that I would love to have with Franck is I would say there was just as much passion as being a hater. But I got to cheer for him. I got to cheer for the spirit of this piece. I can't put that down because it gives you a smile and it makes you feel warm and fuzzy and it makes you definitely want to be that lover. So well done on all the emotions that he captures and conveys in this poem. It's a message that we should all adhere to, and obviously the world needs more lovers than haters. So well done, Frank. I really enjoyed the poem.
Excellent point. Yeah, it really is a pro-lover poem, which would be the stance that you would expect someone to take. Although now it makes me curious to read the opposite poem, you know, the poem written in support of haters, which I don't think you could do really without a tongue-in-cheek, but it's an interesting concept. Thank you, Jeremy. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I think, first of all, it sounds like a fun idea to, you know, read the poem on the person who is a hater, not a lover. This is just beautiful. It is one of those poems you want to cheer for. And it does have a nice philosophical feel to it, and the, you know, that whole wonderful idea that when we treat people well, and then not just well, but we go above and beyond what we should, they blossom when you're attentive, you know. And as you were saying, Babbler, when it's more than just, you know, the physical beneath the sheets, when it's that acknowledgement of their needs to be faithful and to be intimate, and I like where he says, and to share in the pain and joy. I think that's a really important part, because it's not just someone who's saying, I want to be the lover when things are going all fine, but rather that the two share in every time of life, and even when things aren't going well. And just a beautiful, thoughtful write, and very well done.
Yeah, agreed. You know, yeah, you got to be there for both the ups and downs. If you're only there for the ups, that's pretty cold. So excellent point, Pam. Putting the next one up on the board, this is Murky Waters by Lynn Gauthier. And Pam, do you have the SoundCloud for us for this one?
Yes, we do. And here we go.
Murky Waters. Drawn the line ever so fine, somewhere between love and hate. Optimism wary in the forefront of caution, flirting its blurred edges. The verdict by a thread loosely hangs in oscillation. Dormant danger staggering lingers behind flimsy curtains. Loving you exposes me, leaving me vulnerable, precarious on the balancing beam over a trench of shifting sands, dodging odds gambled in a pinch, fearing clouded ulterior motives. I want to trust in you implicitly, risking being taken for the fool. Though feelings can turn on a dime, should you unhinge my world on the edge of love and hate.
Wow, well, that was an absolute fantastic read from Lynn. I'm so glad she sent in the SoundCloud. It's just really nice to hear it read as she would read it, so thank you. I really enjoyed this piece, you know, written from the perspective of someone who is walking that line, who has decided to give the opportunity of being in complete vulnerability, you know, just to be, you know, leaving the door open for love, which also leaves the door open for hate, because she's exposed. Like, it just feels very naked, very raw, you know, and this other person is given the opportunity to either, like, embrace her and pull her onto the side of love, and just make that commitment and make it beautiful, or to push her off the other side into hatred, you know, where taken advantage of and used. So I thought it was a beautiful metaphor, but it also kind of gets me thinking in terms of, you know, this isn't just a one-time occurrence. You know, it happens all the time in a relationship where you have to leave yourself vulnerable to the other person and expose yourself in different ways, you know, whether it's like owning up to mistakes or, you know, letting someone know what you need or trying to be there. Every time you do that, you're kind of walking that tightrope where you can either be embraced or burned. So I thought this was a really gorgeous piece that spoke strongly to me of vulnerability and hope, but also that subtle that anxious fear that comes with that kind of vulnerability. So I thought this was a really beautiful piece. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, this is beautifully written with nice couplets, and then ending with that single line makes it really stand out well on the edge of love and hate. I do like how this has this feeling almost as if there is a sense of guilt, which is the verdict by a thread loosely hangs in oscillation. It makes me think of the imagery where they like hold the string by the thread over your wrist and it goes in different loops to see if you're going to have a boy or a girl. Almost like it's a fortune-telling type idea. And then it is a very raw and honest, and the idea that, you know, you're exposing yourself, where she says, loving you exposes me, leaving me vulnerable, precarious in the balancing beam over a trench of shifting sand. And I think to have it not only be a balancing beam, but on a trench of shifting sand adds to the whole idea of how truly vulnerable this person is making themselves in the moment. So absolutely a wonderful write and very well done.
Yeah, agreed. The image of the shifting sand just does make it seem like, you know, a final thing, like getting sucked in. So great observation, Pam. And what did you think, Jeremy?
Yeah, I think you guys have great comments. Pam, yeah, I agree with you. I love the couplets. I love the classic forms, and I love the fact that this followed that, especially given the subject matter. What you both touched on that is a deeper conversation that I was excited to kind of dive into considering this prompt is I view the fall into love as that faith, that unknowing, that you go into the relationship and falling in love is something new. It's not always the case, but it's something that's unpredicted. It's falling into something new, and there's that trepidation to it. And that's this delicacy that you both talked about. It's something new, and it's something scary, and it's something hopeful, and you feel that. You feel that vulnerability in this entire poem. Hate, on the other side, in my experience, would be something that is much more of a knowledge relationship, something that you've experienced for some time and then you reject. So it's almost the exact opposite. And you see that in this, the threat of that at the very end. Though feelings can turn on a dime, should you unhinge my world? And so it's showing, it's the delicacy, but it's knowing that there is that line, and once you give yourself to the love, If it's not reciprocated, if it's not justified, if it's not if it doesn't work out, then yeah, it's going to turn on that dime and it's going to become that opposite thing, because it's no longer something that's unknown and something precious, but it's something that has been experienced, and it's the exact opposite. And that's what I picked up on this. I mean, the delicacy definitely is emphasized throughout, and that's the beginning. That's the beginning and the uncertainty of all of it, and I don't know. I feel like you guys get my point. I loved the poem. I thought it was beautiful. And I love the greater philosophy of what is being conveyed here. Well done.
Excellent comment, Jeremy. Yeah, no, I agree. It is that such fine hair balancing act. You know, it's the only word I can think of is like exposed, you know. So excellent point. I put the next one up on the board. It's called Love Versus Hate by Diane D. And I'll go ahead and give this one a read. Jade rainbows and crimson oceans, turquoise skin with azure sunrises, like a sandbag-filled river or a green stoplight at a blind intersection, love and hate annulled. Thousands with ornamental vines have been in love-hate relationships like Bridget Jones' Diary of Broken Twigs, love and hate cauterized. Like uncloaking a nascent newborn, travailed from the snugs of liquid love, from the tepid cocoon of black to the staggering reality of white, love and hate elope. In that unsullied caressing second of a new babe in arms, in kangaroo care, a skin-to-skin language of heartbeats that only the pure can know, love is birthed. Like love on a Sunday morning, I'll face smell of sweet, dark coffee misting the air, coated in an icing of confectionery love, like a baked apple pie in a pellet of cherries. Love rebirths hate. Then the morn of the storm brings the odor of sozzled love on a frosty room, polyps of liquidated love marred by frost in a room spins on an axis of Hades. Love and hate blend. Like Mother Teresa, a canonized saint, loved like rain in the desert, undiluted. Her pitcher of love saturates all, and marigolds are preened and in bloom, love and hate synthesized. In coconut fields full of milking sacks, dandelions dazzlingly dip on a silver highway with a golden car and shooting stars in a lightning storm, love is spastic. Like Jeffrey Dahmer hosting Ted Bundy in a smashed mirror of Alexithymia, swathed in a monsoon of monstrosity, as the reaper makes his bed, oxymoronic love and hate. There's a fine line between love and hate. Can angels love demons, like taking a machete to the mast? Can the sun rise if the moon howls? Hate resides inside. End poem. And I'm just going to apologize real quick. If you hear my dogs barking, there are people lighting fireworks off, which they do not like. I really enjoyed this piece and just the different ways that love and hate interact. And there was some really stark imagery in here that I found very fascinating. You know, the idea of Jeffrey Dahmer and Ted Bundy getting together, you know, it's just so dark and twisted. It makes me think of American Psycho, like just the craziness of it. And I also thought, just some of the word use here was really interesting. You know, sozzled and frosty and polyps of liquidated love. You know, I can't think I would have strung those words together, but it has such an image to me. You know, I almost picture, it's like a cyst of love, which is kind of disturbing, you know, but it's such an interesting image to look at, you know. It talks about like the innocence of love and the complexities of love and the subtleties of hate even are tied in here. I just think this is a wonderful exploration of the different interactions of the two emotions. I thought it was just very well done and very complex. So excellent piece from Diane. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, this is an excellent piece. I've been appreciating seeing Diane D's writing on the shows. Like uncloaking a nascent newborn, travail from the snugs of liquid love. I like that imagery. There's something about it that's so visceral. Like a baked apple pie and a pellet of cherries, love reverse hate. It's interesting how her imagery almost seems to purposely jump back and forth from one extreme to another. On one hand, you have cherries and apple pie and Sunday mornings and Mother Teresa, the saint, And then you have the Jeffrey Dahmer and Ted Bundy hosting a party together. Oxymoronic love and hate. There's a fine line. Can angels love demons like taking a machete to mass? I like that whole idea of, you know, can you claim to be that saint, but at the same time be taking that violence, that sense of hate, to a place of worship? And if you think of love in itself, like the human heart, as being a place of worship, are you really truly able to bring in all this violent thought and still have room for what to be caring about other people? And just a wonderful, thoughtful write, and very well done.
I like what you pointed out there, that, you know, can you do both? Like, you know, how do you be both? And yet, interestingly, I think a lot of people are both, you know, a mix of both. So a fantastic point, Pam. What did you think, Jeremy?
Yeah, great points, guys. And great read, Babylar. I think you did this poem beautiful justice in your interpretation of the performance of it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think what Diane was trying to do here was really cool, because love can come in different levels, and it comes in different ways, and it comes in different intensities. And it's hard to kind of capture all of them. I saw in each stanza simile, she does that. She tries to create this beautiful comparison to the different tenets of love. And I think it was a very ambitious attempt at what we're talking about with love and hate. And I like how it always, for me, it always starts with love, whether it's an obvious, when you're talking about rainbows and unicorns, or if you're talking about Jeffrey Dahmer, she's finding love in all these different ways. And then on the back end, there's always the other side. There's always that haunting feel that hate could be in there too. And I like how there's always that kind of, very subtly, she brings in the thought of hate in a lot of these stanzas. And I thought it was a very cool touch to all of it. I mean, they're almost, each one is almost its own standalone thought that you could expand upon and enjoy within this topic. So I thought that was a very cool thing. And then what you guys also talked about, and I picked up on during Babbler's read, was a lot of the language tricks that she used in here that were very pleasant. I too like the odor of sozzled love in a frosty room. That brought a smile to my face. And then a couple of stanzas down, there's also the alliteration of dandelions dizzingly dip, and I enjoyed that as well. But overall, I thought it was a beautiful poem. It was a very ambitious attempt at what the topic was, and in the end, very successful. I was very pleased with what we came across here today.
I agree. And the wordplay, like you pointed out, Jeremy, I think was just fantastic. There was some really great alliteration in here and just interesting choices that I really enjoyed. I thought it was a really clever use of language throughout. So the next piece I've put on the board is called Hate Loving You by Phoenix Aradia. And Pam, would you mind giving this one a read?
I would be happy to. All right. Hate Loving You by Phoenix Aradia. You evoke in me such passion that I scare know what to say. You evoke in me such passion that I scarce know what to do. Kiss you in a sultry fashion or choke you till you turn blue. Treating me like I don't matter, ignoring me on a whim. I may get comments that flatter, but they never come from him. I put on makeup and shave to get some more attention. Affectionate I behave, but it never gets a mention. And as far as actually talking, it doesn't stand a chance. You always send me walking without so much as a glance. But you still set my heart aflame. You stir in me a rampant fire. Just to hear you call my name creates a consuming desire. 12 years we've been together. By now I know you don't see it like me. But if you can't bring yourself to love, then at least allow me to be free. End poem.
great read, Pam. I think you gave this a really excellent voice. So this piece I thought was really well done, you know, even from the title, Hate Loving You, you know, and to start out with this really visceral image of kiss you in a sultry fashion or choke you till you turn blue, you know, just be passionately in love with someone while you cannot stand them. You know, and I think that balance here is just so well executed, you know, taken through the ways that this person is essentially abused, you know, the neglect, the compliments, the getting ignored, and yet they're still so deeply and passionately in love with this person that those few little bits of attention or acceptance that they get just completely floors them, which in my mind, I'm just like, no, that's so sad. Like, that's not, you know, that's not what love is supposed to feel like. And then this pleading at the end, you know, knowing that the other person isn't nearly as in love with them as they are, but they've been together for 12 years. And they're just at this point where it's like, if you can't love me like I need to be loved, then please just let me go. It's almost like they're captive to this back and forth emotion where they spend, you know, 95% or more of the time feeling ignored and worthless, just for that 5% to just, I don't know, it's just very heartbreaking, you know, these types of relationships. So I thought this was very well done. You can feel both the love in it and the hate, even if the love is, you know, desperate and strangled. So I thought it was a beautiful piece. What did you think, Jeremy?
Yeah, well put. Strangled for sure. I don't know about you guys, but at the very end, I just kind of wanted to go, aww, because it's that unreciprocated love. I mean, that fear that anyone would go into any relationship with, thinking that they're giving all of their undying commitment to a relationship and it's not the sentiment is not returned. So yeah, it was painful. I mean, it was really heart-spoken and hard to swallow the fact that someone has to put this down in words. If it is truly an autobiographical poem, I mean, it's a hard situation for anyone to have to witness, for sure. It's bold that it was conveyed in this poem, and it's an understandable situation. But I found myself feeling for this and emoting for this author or this voice in this poem because it is a tough pill to swallow. Whether or not hate is on the backside, I felt more like the voice was a victim than there was hate for anybody because they were committed even after 12 years to stick through it. At the very end, there's a plea saying, you know what, if you're not going to give it to me, then at least set me free. But it's not – it's in a defeated voice. It's in a defeated feeling that, you know what, I'm not going to force the issue on this. I'm still going to try no matter what. I'll take any crumb that you toss me because I love you so much. I mean, it really is a romantic devotion to the relationship, even if it's not working, and it's hard to hear about. So very well written. And a situation that's well captured in this poem. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, excellent points, Jeremy. You know, I guess I took it as more of a like a self-hatred, you know. The why am I dealing with this? Like, why do I let this happen? Kind of self-demoralization as the negative aspect of the relationship. I agree with you. I don't see, like, the burning hate for the other person. They're clearly very much in love with this person, even though maybe they don't want to be. Like, they have a rational side to themselves that says that I shouldn't be, even if you are. But excellent point. And what did you think, Pam?
Well, before I comment, I would like to welcome Salwa. Welcome, Salwa. Glad you could join us.
Hello, everyone. I can't believe it. I'm up. It's almost 1:30 a.m. here. Hi, Babla.
Oh.
Long time no see.
Yes, welcome.
And hello, Jeremy. I don't know if there's anyone else.
Hello.
I see Frank on the board.
Yeah, Frank went to bed. He's
okay.
Yeah. But first of all, wonderful rhyme and flow. I do like how it's very emotive in the idea of, you know, both, it's kind of that idea, you know, of both loving someone and almost like hating yourself. I do like that she brought up the line about, you know, some wanting to choke, you know, where was that? Oh, yeah, the fierce enough to kiss you in a sultry fashion or choke you till you turn blue. That line is particularly appealing to me because of the fact that I'm one of those that always wonders if other women think as violently as I do. Like, I feel like I grew up in this family and this society where it's kind of like women we're supposed to be that loving, nurturing kind. And it's not that I don't have a loving, nurturing side. It's that I also have that side that imagines putting somebody's head through a wall and then pulling it out of the wall bloody. And so I like that. And I do have to say that gentlemen, ladies, if any of you are in a relationship with a woman who is still willing to shave for you after 12 years, thank your lucky stars and treat her like a queen. Just a wonderful, thought-provoking rite all the way through. And just a real sense of trying, but like almost being consumed by despair. And excellent write. Very well done.
I'm putting that down in my notebook, Pam. There's another case for you being a werewolf wanting to put people's heads through the wall. Great, great comment. Great comment.
Excellent comments, Sam. Yeah, no, I also sometimes am wondering, like, am I the crazy one for getting, like, so angry and violent feelings sometimes? So it's nice when you read that, hey, I'm not alone, you know? It's weirdly comforting to see someone else be, like, super extra pissed off. Salwa, did you get a chance to hear the piece?
No, I don't see it. Unfortunately, I was looking. I don't know. Maybe it got carried away. What's the name of the poem? I'll look it up.
This was "Hate Loving You" by Phoenix Aradia.
I'm sorry, I didn't read it. If you let me give me a chance, if I don't know.
Oh
here.
It's
on the top. I'm sorry.
No worries.
Okay, I'll read it and comment on it later. I will.
Yeah, not a problem. Do you want to read your poem next, Talwa? I'll put it up on the board.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, and it's called Fragile and Fragile. Would time permits, I always like to ask, I don't want to be rude, would time permits to read it in both, or you're short on time?
I am new, unfortunately, so I'm not the greatest at gauging this, but it looks like a pretty short piece, so I think you should be good to do both.
Okay. So I'm going to start with the French and then end with English. Fragile, le défi de la vie lui a volé son bonheur, a lancé son cœur dans un néant. Un jour, sa voix douce lui murmura, non, tout n'est pas fini. Ta fragile invisible t'apprendra à aimer et en mourir. Un élan d'espérance est entré dans ton cœur en regardant le vent emporter la poussière de la vie en lancée dans sa mémoire. Elle osa dire adieu aux tourments qui l'ont bercé, aux tendresses non vécues, à la haine à laquelle jamais cédé. Mais c'est ça, ses larmes souffla ses souhaits à l'étincelle de l'aube qui s'approche. The challenge of life has robbed her of happiness, threw her heart into nothingness. One day, a soft voice whispered to her, no, it's not all over. The invisible fragility will teach you how to love and die for it. A surge of hope entered her heart, watching the wind blow, the dust of pain entwined in her memory. She dared to say adieu to the torments that rocked her, to the tenderness and lived, to the hatred that she never gave in. She wiped away her tears and breathed her wishes at the approaching spark of dawn and the storm.
Beautiful read, Alwa.
Thank you.
And while I am not a speaker or even that great of understander of French, it's always so beautiful to hear. I just enjoyed the sounds of it. Lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you. I love the romance of your pieces. Your voice is so beautifully, like, ethereally romantic, and this just has this lovely tinge of sad and yet hopeful, you know, the letting go of the pain. I really liked the line, "Your invisible fragility will teach how to love and die for it." You know, the idea that it is the thing that makes us fragile is also what pushes us to expose ourselves to the possibility, because you need it to not break. You know, you need the love in your life. You need the hope, the light. So I love the kind of sad goodbye to pain, because you do, you know, even if a relationship has gone sour and even if you've experienced negative things, chances are not everything in the relationship was bad. And when relationships end, it's usually sad, even if it's sad because you're giving up the hope. You know, you're letting go of the hope that it could ever be something good or something worthwhile. And there's just sadness in that in itself. And I think this captures it beautifully, you know, just the pain of letting go in the hope that something better can happen. It's a lovely piece.
Thank you so much, Beth.
And what did you think, Jeremy?
Totally agree, Babbler. I'm bilingual, but it's not French. And I chose to not read the first part, and I just let myself listen to the beauty of, I mean, French is such a sensual language, and that was a beautiful read. It's hard not to be taken aback with the sounds of the poetry when you were performing that. That was a treat, Sal. I really enjoyed it. In terms of the meat of what happens here in this poem, understanding it and deconstructing it, based upon the title Fragile, I didn't see the character as fragile at all. In fact, I saw the character as very brave and very strong. What was fragile was the subject of love and the fact that it was fleeting and the fact that the subject had been victim to losing love. And that was the fragile piece, because it's something that it's hard to hold on to in a lot of instances. Perseverance of the voice in this poem is anything but. It's contradicting. It's juxtaposed to the feeling of the subject of losing love, but someone that is willing to be strong enough and persevere and then try again at whatever cost. And it's very endearing and inspiring. You're like, you know what? It hurts like hell when you lose it. But she is not willing to give up totally. She's wiping away her tears, and she's looking to that spark. And you're like, hell yeah, girl, go for it again. Get back in the saddle. And I don't know. The only way I could describe it was inspiring. So I love the dance of the poem. I love the dance of the subject matter, and very well performed.
Thank you so much, Jeremy.
Yeah, agreed. It's very pretty. I see on the board that Pam stepped out for a minute. I'm not sure if she's back or not. Pam, are you back?
Well, right. I'm just
I'll
looking
take
at
that.
Stuff behind the scene, so I'll be back with you. Sorry about that.
No worries. Just checking. Thanks, Pam.
I'm going to stay for one poem and then go. I'm sorry. Just like I have to get up early tomorrow. I'm sorry for that. Usually I don't like to do that, but.
Oh, no worries. Thank you for calling
in.
Love having you.
I stay for one more and then I'll go. Thank you.
Yep. Let me pop it on the board here. So the next piece that I'm putting is Hell Hath No Fury by Rite of Passage. Jeremy, would you give this one a read?
Yeah, and I'm inspired, so I would like to read it and translate it in French first, even though I don't speak French, just to kind of hook you guys. I'm sorry. Rite of Passage. Rite of Passage. Hell hath no fury. Vengeance from heaven, love turned to hatred. The lions cry, fires tormented unabated. The wrath of furies in ethereal form, the thoughts of pure hatred toward those who have spurned. Some say it's burning that swallows her whole, but revenge is a dish that's best served ice cold. Once love is lanced in whole, never part, one shouldn't play with affairs of the heart. When you set to deceive a tiger you train, don't play with love. It's a dangerous game. End poem.
Thank you for the read, Jeremy. I thought this one was really interesting. Just it's such violent imagery in here, you know, love turned to hatred and the ways that it's kind of embodied in like this tiger or cat character, you know, that's just like this tortured, violent thing. You know, and then that last stanza or second to last, depending on how you divide it, you know, when you set to deceive a tiger, you train. You know, you can't really train a tiger, which is why it's in quotes. You know, wild animals, they'll behave if they want to, but it's not going to be perfect. And there's always this threat. And I think that really encompasses the feeling I get from this piece where it's, you know, love is a beautiful thing, but it's not tameable. You know, there's always a potential for it to turn to something equally violent and terrible, you know, hate, of course. So I thought this was a really interesting take on it, just the idea that, you know, the way that love turns into hate because of the power of the feeling. It's almost painted as love is a beast in a way, which I really kind of enjoy as a concept. I think is fascinating to me. Yeah, so excellent rite of passage. What did you think, Sawa?
Well, I love Catherine's writing. I miss her actually. I haven't heard her for a while. One, I like the ending very much. I love the whole idea of the poem. But once love is lanced and whole, never with affairs of the heart, when you set to deceive a tiger you train, don't play with love. It's a dangerous game. Because it can, I think deeper than just vengeance. It is when someone, if there is violence, if you become a violent, you're going to turn the person, some people, like not everyone, but you might invite the other person to become violent in love. So I think that's, or even hurting, then I think it's a dangerous game. You don't play with someone's heart because the result can be really also violent. I think that's what, I'm not sure if that's what she's going with, but that's what I get. And I think my poem, and it wasn't very clear about it, it's really the fragility coming from also this kind of pain and violence, but I wasn't very clear about it. So it's not really going back to that same person, but wait, hoping for something new to happen. I wasn't very clear about it. So anyhow, but I just wanted to explain that I didn't explain very well. That's beautiful. I love her writing, so deep, and so she always puts so much. She surprises always with her writing. Always something that takes you by surprise. And this one, then she's there. I really enjoy her writing very much.
Thank you, Sawa. Just a note about yours. I feel like I did get the impression that it was leaving a bad relationship behind.
Exactly.
I mean, that is the feeling that I got. You know, and then the sadness within that is the giving up, you know, on something because it's not salvageable. just that acknowledgement can be very painful. So I do think you communicated that well.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt Catherine Poe. I'm sorry about that.
No, you're good. But I did really enjoy this piece as well. And I think you had some very good points about it too. Yeah, the don't play with somebody's heart or it can get ugly, I think is a good distillation of the thought. What did you think, Jeremy?
Yeah, I'm enjoying Tommy Shaw here at the bottom of her with his Miami Vice song at this 1980s throwback that is very fitting. You know what I liked about this? Is there's a lot of common themes. It's almost like there's a lot of cliches when we talk about love and hate. And Catherine doesn't ever use them. I don't like cliches and poems, and she never uses them, but she alludes to them and punches them up, you know? So there's a lot of familiarities that you hear in this poem, but it's a clever subtlety in which she makes them her own, and she like I said, she turns up the volume a bit. Revenge is a dish best served cold, or love is a dangerous game, or don't play with affairs of the heart. They're all kind of familiar themes, but it's punched. It's very much like this underwater lion at the top of it. It comes at you, and I felt this whole poem had that edge. It had this warning. It had this edge. It had this bite to it that you want to be comfortable, but you can't because it's all cranked up a notch. So very cool poem. Very, very interesting take on it all. And I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I like your pointing out that she does do a good job of elevating a cliche, like taking it and reworking it into something a little bit fresher. So I think that's a great point. So thank you. I'm going to go ahead and put the next one up on the board, which will be Full of Promise by Thomas B. And I'll go ahead and give this one a read. The arguments of leaves about what path to take creates a dance of shadows in the arena of daylight. Often when looking back at memories, what meaning, if any, they possess, makes me feel like I am trying to see what origami creature was created by looking at the creases left on a plain page of maybe. The more it is a cavalcade of presence addressing the ego's glory, the more deeply it impossible to enjoy what is available to be shared. She looked up at me from the photo album, the laughter about recounting a memory still shown on her face. I could only see the shadow's caricature created as I pretended to join her. Looking back, the seasons were filled with the cornucopia overflowing. I loved her long after the footsteps in the snow had melted away and left a path of crocus. I see her hair, a mane in the wind, the fierceness she possessed, standing arms akimbo. We never found a time or place where we were comfortable at this play of couple. End poem. I really enjoyed this piece. Just the mixture of imagery. I feel like it's almost like a collage of moments, you know, watching the leaves tumbling from a tree and the shadows that they paint. And the idea of that being an argument, the argument about what paths to take is what, you know, the leaves falling causes the friction. Just there's so much encapsulated even in that moment. It's almost like its own little poem. About, you know, the death of a relationship with the falling and the scattering and the arguments. I just thought that was beautifully executed here. But then we're taken then onto, you know, looking at memories and trying to see, you know, what do you recall in a memory? Like, what is it about? And the idea of that metaphorically being like looking at the creases in a page, like looking at an unfolded piece of origami to try to figure out what is this, you know, and just how impossible that would be to look at a square with folds in it to see, you know, what was this once. I thought it's just a beautiful and novel concept to me. I really enjoyed it. you know, and then taken again to, you know, just how it's just feeding your ego, and to look at these albums and to read into them too much. Like, you're just the almost wastefulness of looking at the past, and then taken to this woman who is laughing, but not sharing in that, like the facade. I just thought this was really beautiful, and it's like it will reminisce of the good parts of a relationship. It's like the bittersweet loss of love, with the bitterness of pretending to still care. I just think it's just this wonderful juxtaposition. I loved it. I thought the imagery in here was absolutely fantastic, and the feelings that were elicited with saying so much in such simple language, I just think was wonderfully done. I think this really exemplifies for me, you know, showing and not telling. So beautiful piece of work, Thomas. And I see that Salwa has headed out, but thank you so much for joining us. I always love to hear from you. And Pam is back. So, Pam, did you get a chance to hear this one by Thomas
Dean?
Yes,
I am.
Do you want to give us your
thoughts? Oh, absolutely. As always, this is just a beautiful and intelligent. And as you said, I like the way he's captured that kind of end of a relationship or the beginning of the end, where you're still pretending to care or you're still trying to convince yourself that there's something there. And I like the imagery, especially when he describes her hair and even the way that in that one stanza where he says, she looked up at me from a photo album to laugh about recounting a memory still shown on her face. There's something about going through photo albums, you know, the whole nostalgia of it, but also the fact that it can just dig up old wounds and old demons that you thought you had left behind. I really thought this was a beautiful and intriguing write and very well done. Babbler has dropped. Okay, well, she will have to hopefully call back soon. And Jeremy, I'm guessing you already commented on this.
No, I can spend some time with it.
All
right.
I
haven't said anything about it yet. Yeah, it was a very cool poem. And the first half of it, it's very ethereal, very philosophical. And you get caught up in it. As Babbler performed it, you're kind of trying to make sense and apply the thoughts of it and let your own mind drift off. And then I like how midway he grabs you. He grabs you with, she looked up at me from the photo album. I went, oh, now this became personal. So you have the theory behind what's going on, and then all of a sudden it became more of a story and it became more personalized. And so whatever thoughts or whatever way you interpreted the deeper philosophical meaning of the first half of this poem, he then allows you to take that and apply it to a personal instance, which I thought was a very cool technique for this poem. It kind of focused whatever thoughts you were having, he's grabbing you and then focusing you in a certain direction, which I thought was very powerful. The move that he makes towards the very end was stunning. I like how the stanzas ends on we never, and then there's that pause, that natural pause before he closes the piece. It was impactful to me, and I really liked it. And Pam, I know you're a wordy, so I have to mention it. There are several $5 words littered throughout this poem that caught my attention. Cavalcade, caricature, crocus, cornucopia. I always love it when someone challenges the convention by putting more complex words in a poem.
You know, and what's the point of being a poet if you can't play with words?
Exactly. And I thought Thomas
welcome
really took...
back, Babbler.
Thank you.
I swear it's not an after midnight show unless somebody drops at some point.
You're in the middle of talking, and then all of a sudden it went silent. I'm like, did I drop? And in the middle of me going, did I drop? I hear doo-doo, like the hang up noise. I'm like, yes, it was me. Oops. Yeah, I noticed, Jeremy, while you were saying all of the $5 words, sounds like they also all started with C's.
Yeah, I was trying to make sense of that, too, the hard sound of C, and see if that had any impact. But I couldn't find any significance to it. I was trying to make it up, but I couldn't. But I appreciated the language nonetheless.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. I was the weird kid in school who'd get made fun of for using big words. I'll never forget the time I was at a party and, like, literally everybody stopped to laugh at me because I used the word gargantuan instead of big, and everyone thought that was hysterical for some reason. But I read a lot, so I have a lot of words that I can use for things. I have put the next piece up on the board. It is How Can I Love You and Not Hate You by Pink Fairy 5. Pam, would you mind giving that one a read?
I would be happy to. How can I love you and not hate you by Pink Fairy 5. As sugar generates cancer, you generate the most severe feelings in me. You are my sugar, my joy, and my cancer, my illness. I am compelled to love you in the midst of loathing. You are the fish hook I bite into in the middle of a delicious slice of flaked catfish. You are the puncture in my brand new tire while retaining your position as my new car itself. How can I love you this intensely and not despise you? That's the question, my love. Ah, that is the question. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I really liked this brevity is like examination of almost loving somebody too much. You know, as sugar generates cancer, you know, the way that overindulging in good things causes bad things, as a comparison to being too in love with somebody, I thought was really fascinating. You know, the fish hook I bite into in the middle of a delicious slice of flaked catfish. So this succulent, wonderful, delicious meal that is then ruined with a barb to the cheek. You know, the imagery of that and the almost taste of it. You know, the almost taste like the nice, delicious fish and then like the iron taste of blood is just really fascinating to me. It almost to me seems like somebody who is afraid to be too in love to the point that they're more scared than hateful. You know, like the this can't end well because it's too good, like too good to be true kind of thinking, which is kind of fascinating to me. Like maybe it's not so much about hating the other person as it is being like really scared to be this vulnerable. Like a doubt, a lingering doubt in the back of the mind. So I found this piece very fascinating. I really enjoyed it. Jeremy, what did you think?
Are you on mute, Jeremy?
Yep.
Yeah, I've been talking for about 5 minutes. Sorry. It's interesting that we ran into catfish again, guys, and it's not the conventional bait and switch symbolism. Once again, someone has chosen to use catfish in this prompt, which is interesting to me. Very cool poem. I'm a fan of Pink Fairy, and what I really like is all the rhetorical questions. Even from it pops up in the title and it's continued throughout, and then at the very end, there's that. You know, that light uncertainty of, that is the question, and how Pam performed it was very impactful. So, yeah, it was an exercise in brevity, but it's a lasting, memorable poem. The fact that she goes with several metaphors in a short period of time is impressive because it all stuck to the same meaning. So I enjoyed it very much.
Mm-hmm. Great point, Jeremy. Yeah, no, there are quite a few metaphors tucked in here for just how short of a poem it is. So that's very interesting. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I like the way I really thought this was creatively written. And I like that she also brought in the catfishing, but in a more subtle way. And with the idea of biting into that hook as you're enjoying the delicious meal. And the interesting thing about that line is I think it makes for a great metaphor because of the idea that if you have a hook inside a catfish that you're eating, presumably you're the one that caught the catfish. And in which case it's almost like you hooked something and then regretted hooking it. And I also liked the opening line really grabs your attention, as sugar generates cancer. And as you said, the idea of something being almost fearful of something that's too good to be true, and getting that kind of almost like suspicious nature. I think it's a wonderful write and very well done.
Yeah, and something else that I just noticed, and I'm going to nitpick on shorter poems because every move, in my humble opinion, has to be very deliberate when you do stuff in such short work. But there's no capitalization besides the automatic I in the second until the very end, in which that is the question, my love. Ah, that is the question. So, again, it's added emphasis on the very end of this, of that thinly veiled threat that there could be uncertainty about the whole love, the whole endeavor here in this relationship. So picked up on that. I thought it was a cool move.
Yeah, interesting point. Yeah, sometimes I'm really fascinated by the punctuation and the grammar of pieces, which is funny because then I'm probably kind of sloppy when it comes to myself. Because I move from writing on my phone to writing on my computer, depending where I am. And my phone will auto-capitalize things. And maybe I'm not always perfect about going back and edging it to be the way that I want. But interesting point, just something for me to think about while I'm writing.
Yeah, you better watch out, because there's those of us out here that are watching Babbler, so you better pay attention. Some of us are really hinging on every capital letter that you put in your poem, so watch out.
If you see ones that look really weird with no obvious point to it, that could probably be switching over. In general, I don't want every first letter to be capitalized in my poem. Just in general, I think that's weird, but that's just personal preference. I put the next one on the board. It is True Love, at least I think it's supposed to be, that or it's True Ive, by Daniel Deschino. Jeremy, would you mind giving this one a read?
Absolutely. I was made from emeralds and artistry. Pride and rebellion flow through my veins. I am made of reflection and solitude, a victim of energy, tragic and pure. Under attack from all that I see, hearing all everything I will be. I touch the world and it becomes part of me. One of billions, I shine like a star. You blaze so much brighter. Yes, so far, so far, so far. There is passion blind and free. I cannot stop what I see. Control and reason, the only guidance to be found, like the stars dancing in the night. Future vision shining bright. Your thoughts a harmonious sound from a stone rarer than gold, from an ancient story told. I see you everywhere, all around. Time to let beauty nurture and grow. Time for the weeds to finally show. Time for the battle seeds to sow from the inner conflict that I do not know. I need the smile within your eyes, behind the parts that I despise. A give and take, no more lies, a melody, a compromise. I don't know what I want. I don't know what I need. I don't know what I feel. I don't know how far to concede. I need a clear understanding. No more passion lies. Compassion, companion, a compromise. End poem.
Great read, Jeremy. I really liked where you emphasized on this. I think that was very well done. You know, looking at this piece, it's very interesting. To me, it feels like the first part's about The falling into love and that passion and the all-consuming joy and appreciation, you know, of falling in love. You know, there's passion, blind and free. I cannot stop what I see. Control and reason are the only guidance to be found, like stars dancing in the night. And then it kind of turns to this, you know, letting the love grow, but also for the weeds to show. You know, that part where you fall out of that initial infatuation part of love where the other person is, like, perfect in your eyes and you start to see their imperfections. You start to see that they're human, you know, and instead of being like, oh, I love that smirk that they have on their face, it turns into, okay, no, he's being rather pompous or, you know, whatever. You know, you start to realize the flaws in your partner's personality a little bit more as time goes on. You know, but it's not so much a hatred as it is just, you know, starting to realize that there are things that you don't like and you don't really know what you want or how to dissolve, you know, how to fix it. It's almost advocating for less strong emotions. I feel like this is almost advocating that extreme love is not good. Like, it's not any better than hate, because it's blinding and all-consuming and it's not true. That true love is more subtle. It's more middling. It's a combination of emotions, which I think is in many ways very true. So I enjoyed this piece. I thought it was an interesting examination of the negative side of love. So I found it very fascinating in a walk through the development of a relationship that's put into an almost cosmic scale, you know, the looking at minerals and cosmology and those kind of elements in here. I think put it on a really grand scale. So thank you, Daniel, for the wonderful piece. And what did you think, Pam?
Well, I really appreciate this. It's a wonderful write. And I have to say that, Jeremy, the way you emphasize certain parts, especially when the repetitive lines of I don't know what I want, I don't know what I need, there was a real striking sense of emotion in your voice that really added to the write. It's intriguing to me, this whole rite, in that the idea that it starts off, well, that first stanza very much has a mythological feel to it. I feel like here's somebody who you could almost picture them coming out of Greek mythology. There's such a sense of that tragedy, but also of almost someone who feels very empowered, I almost want to say godlike. And then it's almost like it delves into this realm as it goes a couple stanzas down where all of a sudden you realize this person is no longer in their element. They're confused, they're lost emotionally, and they realize what they need. As it says, I need a clear understanding, you know, and it's no longer about, you know, wanting the passion, because passion is coming with lies, but rather about wanting to work together, to have compassion for each other and companionship. That whole idea of a give and take within an honest relationship, which is something that whether it's the dishonesty is on their part or the partner's part or both, it's obviously something that has destroyed not only the relationship but their faith in relationships. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, agreed. I think that's a really good point. It is just asking for a partnership. I think that's a wonderful way to look at it, Pam. And what did you think, Jeremy?
Yeah, I'm influenced by your guys' insight. I think you both had great takes on this piece. And I see where you're both coming from, and I agree with a lot of your points. I think there is a desire and a searching and a yearning for the essence of love. And there's a cry for that, and you see that in the repetition. You see that in the pounding of this poem. And I don't know. I don't know how else to put it. And I kind of want to nerd out about the title and assume that the O was left out on purpose in love, because you just want to get down to the essence. You want to get down to the hard vowel sounds of what love is. I don't know. It kind of fit the feel of what you guys were saying, because I agreed wholeheartedly on both of your takes. So great comments, guys.
Yeah, maybe the O isn't intentional. Yeah. I don't know.
I gotta pretend that it is. I gotta pretend that it is. I mean, I want to think that, that he's diving in.
All right, I've put the next one on the board. It's Lane Closure by Versus Goliath, and I'll go ahead and give this one a read. Rain bangs against the window pane like kamikaze pilots smashing planes. Slain destiny ingrained in wood stain. Psychologically, hate brings no gains. Brain hangs onto pain like sugar canes. Sip caffeine tea, my acerbic addiction. Warlords laughing at cartoon depictions. It's baffling, the amount of truth in fiction. Carloads of fiends, spoonful of afflictions. Not half gets counted, cartel's conviction. Cruise control revs engine going uphill. Poor lost souls forever taking their pills. Bruised foal waits for mare to get refill. Hoarse throat, cold mate, bedroom chills. Abusive mold, how survivor feels thrill. Fogged mirror, rainbow headlights glow. Forgotten fears high now from low. It's cleared, pipe clean for better flow. Forged steel, shears, flint, bowl lit, smoke blows. Cough into gear, a reminder, take it slow. Ease into the next lane, a slick change. Teaser trailers, treks to Spain, plans arranged. Que sera, sera, introspection, open range. Pulsar failure, electing refrain from estranged. Please and thank you, a typical exchange. Driving down highway in between the lines, contrived poetry always seems to rhyme. Like life's irony, wise men have seen the signs, arrived in country, waves of golden time, thrived entirely, released my iron oxide binds. End poem. Well, I absolutely love the rhythm and rhyme of this piece. The cadence is fantastic. The repetitiveness of internal and end lines rhymes, which they then mock at the end of the poem, almost insinuating that their piece is contrived. You know, contrived poetry always seems to rhyme, which I found very interesting for having done it so much. I also really love the thought in here, the mix of the positivity and negativity, almost like an examination of addiction. You know, the loving the drug use but hating being a drug user. The need for something that you want but don't want, and just this really visceral and strong difference of emotion, which I found really fascinating. You know, cruise control revs, engine going uphill, poor lost souls forever taking their pills, bruised foal waits for mare to get refill. You know, just going through the motions because you need it, but you don't want it. And it just using because it's almost compulsory, but you loved it at one time and you love the feeling of the high of it. But hating as well. I thought this was absolutely fantastic, and also just the idea of not so much looking at it in the frame, at least I didn't take it to be a romantic relationship at all. You know, not a romantic kind of love, but like a euphoric kind of love, and then framing it in terms of addiction for like hate and loathing, I thought was like wonderfully creative, and just the walkthrough on this. I thought this was an outstanding piece. What did you think, Jeremy?
Plain destiny ingrained, inward stain. Psychological hate brings no gain. Brain hangs on to pain like sugar cane. I mean, it's a hip-hop song. And I'm a huge rap fan forever. So this was, it just had that beat, like you said, Babbler. It had that beat, that cadence, and that rhyme that just made, I wanted to hear the music behind it because I think it just, it paced along, which very well fit into the overall theme of being in the car, being rock and roll, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But then there's always the looming lane closure ahead, saying that this good time at any time can come to an abrupt close. But no, I mean, the pace of this, I wish I could do it. I loved the rhyme, and I loved the hard-hitting beat of all of it. So that's really what stuck out the most to me.
Yeah, it is very rhythmic. Yeah, it really could be a rap piece for sure, or some kind of hip-hop piece. What did you think, Pam?
I'm sorry. I'm distracted with something, but I always appreciate Verse's writing and his time, so I apologize, but thank you.
No worries. Let me go grab the next one here off the board. Do, do, do. Oh, my goodness. For some reason, I just can't get it to copy. I'll get it. All right, so I'm putting the next one up with by My Angel 3. And it's called Athena, and I'll go ahead and give this one a read. I hold my breath and count to 10, biding my time, standing for you again. And in the midst of every hour, my anxiousness burgeons like a poisonous flower, all greenhouse greenish blues and open lacerations. I seethe as I search for clues in every corner of my mind. My rage ascends to the roof. I can't be tolerant, for I have given you every opportunity. And I get the message now. This is not, and with zero probability, ever will be, a romance. End poem. Well, I really love how biting this piece is. You know, we have clearly moved out of love and into hate. You know, I gave you every chance. I gave you every opportunity to do the right thing, to be there for me, to make the changes, you know, whatever it is that the demands were. And it hasn't been taken. So this is done. You know, like, we're done. The door is way closed. So I really enjoyed it. And I felt like the language was beautifully visceral. You could feel the anger paired in here with the rhyme and meter of this piece. So I thought it was a great write. And Pam, did you want to comment on this one?
Yeah, you're right. It is another great write. This has been a wonderful night of poetry. I really like how people have just been delving into the subject and greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Pam. And what did you think, Jeremy?
Yeah, I think you captured it well. I love the second. My anxiousness burgeons like a poisonous flower, all greenhouse, greenish blues, and open lacerations. Yeah, she's had enough, and she's going to pop. It's over. There's that. There's a holding on, and I guess it's from the very beginning when she says, I hold my breath and count to 10, but even that is saying that I'm already done. So yeah, it's the relationships run its course, and I like the restraint, and you feel the restraint. You still feel the restraint in the voice of wanting to go ahead and let that rage that ascends to the roof bust on through the chimney and fly on down the road. But, yeah, the restrained pain of all of this is definitely more on the hate and the disappointed side. But it can't exist. It can never exist unless love originally lived in the house. So, yeah, it's definitely part of the whole roller coaster of relationships, and I think it's very well captured in this poem. I enjoyed it a lot.
Thank Thank you, Jeremy. Yeah, I agree. It is kind of the end of the roller coaster with the seething anger, which seems to me like it came from love. So I put the next one on the board. It's called The Thin Line by Damn It Dave. Jeremy, are you able to read this one?
I am. I'm still here. Yes, I can. Damn it, Dave.
Yeah, thank you.
Sorry, I was having trouble with mute. The Thin Line, a modern sonnet. The thin line between amour and hate is thin. It's drawn when seeds of jealousy are sown. And once a loving heart lets anger in, it isn't long till the plant has grown. Resentment fertilizes enmity. Affection slowly turns to discontent, and it can morph a friend to an enemy when love begins a deep and dark descent. The power of amour, a potent force, and when it dies, the hate leaves is strong. The river of the heart will change its course, and when that once felt so right, then feels so wrong. It doesn't take that much to cross the line and leave love rotted fruit upon the vine. End poem.
Thank you for the great read, Jeremy. I enjoyed this piece. Sonnets, are pretty short, but it's such an interesting form. I liked the looking at, the cause of hate. And again, we're drawn to this idea of it as a plant that's growing like a weed, that there's this seed that can show up sometimes in love, and maybe it's always there, but if you water it and you tend to it, then it takes off, and the next thing you know, love has been strangled. I particularly love that last line, and leave love rotted fruit upon the vine, to never have harvested love, but to have just let it rot away is such a visceral image. And what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, oh my goodness, I really like how they talk about it, not just being a romantic relationship, but being a friendship that gets ruined, a friendship within a romantic relationship. Resentment fertilizes enmity, affection slowly turns it to discontent, and it can morph a friend to an enemy when love begins a deep and dark descent. I thought that was wonderful rhyme and flow, and the whole idea of how easily something that was once can be destroyed, that was once on a strong foundation. Just an excellent write and very well done.
Now, I love that you point out the friendship angle. I think that's right on in an excellent observation. And what did you think, Jeremy?
Yeah, really dug it. Appreciate the fact that we went with the modern sonnet format, the altering rhyme with the four line stanzas and the two rhymes at the end. I love it. I mean, sonnets are golden, and I think Dave did a great job of adhering to that. And I think he also adhered very well to the overall theme of what we've been talking about tonight. Like, he analyzed it in a greater encompassing view of everything that we've been talking about, and I think it touches on all of the strong points that do exist between love and hate. I apologize, Dave, for tripping on the word I can't even say it now. How do you guys say it? Enmity. Wow.
Enmity.
Sorry, Dave.
Okay.
I think it's a great word. I've already looked it up. I'm going to try to use it and put it in my vocabulary because I obviously really dig the piece. I think you did a great job of sticking on theme and encapsulating everything we talked about, like I said. So very much enjoyed.
Thank you, Jeremy. Yeah, no, some words just trip us up randomly. It just happens.
Some words I've heard can get an entire party to start giggling and to a gargantuan level.
I put the next one up on the board. It's called Faking It by Rob Azza. Pam, would you mind giving that one a read?
I would be happy to. All right, Faking It by Rob Azza. She wore me to a nub with her benzine eyes and chalk-laced face, everything about her darkened perspective on lust, on love, on fraudulent endeavors, duplicated and widened into a heady cathedral of overindulgence, lending neither time nor faith to our cause as she emptied her mole and released her spray into an exhaustive display of might and entitlement, staggering my senses, mangling my manhood, pruning the desire in which we sow, until we laid flaccid, staring into our lying eyes, faking it all the way. End poem.
Thank you, Pam. Wonderful read. I really enjoyed this piece quite a bit. Just the souring of a relationship that you get walked through. And that first line is such a grabber. She wore me to a nub with her benzene eyes and chalk-laced face. You know, talk about dead tired, you know, of a relationship. And then the fact that the relationship has tainted his perspective on everything, you know, in life, lust, love, like just everything seems fake because they are just faking. He's just faking this relationship, following abuse, you know, just, you know, her exhaustive display of might and entitlement that just wore him down to this kind of hateful and fraudulent and flaccid person. I just really enjoyed it. I thought this was a wonderful write. Just very expressive, especially for like a one single sentence that just kind of goes on. I loved it. And what did you think, Jeremy?
Yeah, great analysis. I love the opening as well, especially the benzene eyes. And I love how, yeah, faking it really is the ultimate end of all of it. When you don't have any, the antithesis of both love and hate, which are both very passion-filled emotions, is the lack of either, is faking it. It's not having any kind of emotion. That really is the other end of the spectrum. And I like how that's even sexualized at the very end of this, when we both lay there flaccid with our lying eyes. I mean, it's just saying, yeah, all of it is just done, but faking it and trying to pretend and not having any emotion is really the end of it all. And I like that defeated feel of it. And I think it's a different angle on everything that we've looked at tonight, is the lack of both love and the lack of both hate really is the other end of the punctuation mark. So very cool perspective, Rob. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I like that point, you know, that it really is the faking it, the hollowness, the absence of passion, where love and hate are both such passionate emotions that really the opposite of love and hate is neither one. It's that empty feeling. It's the devoid of emotion. So excellent point. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really like Rob Azza's style, how, as you said, it kind of flows in one continuous sentence. And I also like, Babla, that you brought up the idea of indifference, when it's no longer that, there's no longer any emotion whatsoever. I really like that the lines he opened up with, she wore me to a nub with her benzene eyes and chocolate face. The whole idea that there's this almost kind of like poison, you know, the how this is, it's so painful, so, you know, just, you can tell it's a relationship that's good for neither one of them. Just absolutely a powerful write and very well done.
Agreed. And I just want to take a moment to just look at the shape of this. I feel like it's, you know, almost a shape poem, you know. I just thought I'd point that out, that it's just kind of an interesting form that it's taken on.
Oh, that is. That is.
Excellent comment. I'm going to put up a short one that I wrote to close us out for the night. This is Self, and it goes like this. I love you. My reflection has whispered it, screamed it, declared it. Yet I'm bruised again from the abuse. A sick carousel where I keep betting on the same horse because there's no way off. I love you, I whisper again, and wonder if this time I can do better. End poem. So, feel weird leading the comments on my own, but Pam, what did you think?
I actually think this is a brilliant brevity, and I really like the metaphor of the carousel where you keep getting on the same horse, and I like how there's that last line, there's that kind of self-hatred, like you feel like the person feels like it's their fault because maybe the person abuses them because they don't know how to love correctly. And I think it's just a powerful and emotive right. Oh, and by the way, I hate reading my own comments too, so if I'm ever around with you, just feel free to ask and I'll gladly read comments.
Yeah, it just feels odd. And it's like, and what did you think of my poem?
Yes, please tell me how wonderful I am. I'm so needy.
Yeah. Insert praise here, please. No. And what did you think, Jeremy?
Yeah, I love that metaphor you put in the middle, Babbler. I think that's really, really cool and really slick. The carousel, and you keep betting on the same horse because it's going to keep coming around. It's going to be the same position. But you're going around and around again, and you keep doing it. There's no way off. I think that's the perfect metaphor for what's going on here. This is a real self-prophesizing piece, and it's a very toxic relationship. It's all about self. But self is the one that's doing all of the suffering. And there's no way out of it. And there's even the promise at the end that's going to keep happening. There's no end to it. And that's why that metaphor, again, in the middle is just fits so well. There's a lot of pain in it, and it's painful to hear, but it's a familiar situation that I think all of us have at least seen from afar, and hopefully none of us have experienced. But I really like how you did it. There's a softness to it, even though it's a very harsh reality, with all the whispering and the quiet and the enclosed, the timid feeling and the victim of all of it. Still, you want to scream for him and say, you got to get out of it. So you're cheering for him, but it seems like it's almost there's no hope to it. So very cool poem. Very cool perspective on the topic. I liked it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. So that's the last poem of the night. Thank you guys so much for calling in. It's really appreciated. Big thanks to Jeremy, of course, and also to Salwa and Pam, as always, and Phil. I know that Efeziana has another contest that's open that's about Disney villains that I'm sure she would appreciate some rights on if anyone is feeling inspired. It's a really interesting contest where the quotes are by Disney villains, and yet the content of the quotes themselves are surprisingly positive messages. So I encourage people to check that out. and so thank you for joining us. Always good to have you.
Great show, Babbler. Good night, everyone.
Great show, guys.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. Bye.